ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
For us, it's like we're business as usual, but if you want to ask me if this business is tough, I would say absolutely.
That's LIV Golf CEO Scott O'Neill at their most recent tournament in Mexico, doing his best to hose down panic around the Rebel Golf League's shaky future. Well, it's been reported today that Saudi Arabia's public investment fund will be pulling all funds from LIV Golf at the end of the season. So, can LIV survive without their Saudi cash? What does it mean for Aussies like Cam Smith? And can their most successful event in Adelaide withstand this blow? LIV Golf mightn't be dead, but it's very much on life support. I'm Declan Byrne. This is ABC Sport Daily. Andrew Beaton is a leading golf reporter for the Wall Street Journal and broke the news today that the future of LIV Golf is in serious peril. Andrew, thanks for joining us. Give us the latest.
Yeah, so what has been the writing on the walls for several weeks is now becoming official, as this is going to be the last year that Saudi Arabia's public investment fund funds LIV Golf. And they have poured billions into this since 2022 when LIV first teed off. They attracted some of the biggest golfers around, but it hasn't succeeded commercially. So it's kind of understandable how it's reached this point.
Scott O'Neill spoke a couple of weeks ago and said, yes, there's challenges ahead. Does it look like the challenge is going to be too far for the LIV Golf Tour to even continue without this money? Or what can you see happening in the next couple of months?
What's clear is they're going to engage in discussions with outside investors, and they're going to try to salvage something. But the question is, who would really invest in this business as it currently stands when it's hemorrhaging money? This is a business that has lost hundreds of millions, if not more, a year. And so even if LIV Golf exists, I think there's a widespread acknowledgement that it will look quite different. Can they afford the giant purses? Can they afford the giant contracts for players? And so even if something does exist and some remnant of LIV does go on, and I know that there are people there that are optimistic that they can do that, there's no question that it'll look incredibly different from this lavishly funded tour that we've seen over the last several years.
You know, this notion of, do you have to raise money? Probably. Like, this is business. You know, but if we keep the trajectory going the way we are and the revenue growth going, this is going to be a really good business for a really long time.
So you mentioned optimism. There's been defiance as well over the past few weeks. You've reported that tomorrow is D-Day. That's when it will become official. Do you think their mood will change, or will they still be holding firm to the fact that LIV will continue?
Yeah, no, I think they're going to spend the next several months, the rest of the year, trying to find a way to make this work. Whether that's realistic, I don't know. And there's also probably different definitions of what makes it work in terms of, can they still afford to pay all the top players? Can they afford the rich prize funds? And then so is it truly the same? Not all the players are around or what have you. So the question is both, will it continue? And even if it does, what it would truly look like.
Have you heard from any of the players on the LIV Tour as to how they're receiving this news?
I have not spoken to anyone from the LIV Tour. It is likely not a surprise. I mean, the writing has been on the wall for several weeks, if not longer, at this point.
Bryson goes back to back with playoff wins in Singapore and now South Africa.
It wasn't exactly subtle when Saudi Arabia's public investment fund put out its strategic report about its vision for investing over the next 5 years, and it didn't mention LIV. This has been sort of in the works for a little while now. And I think there's probably some widespread understanding is that a lot of them will want to be figuring out what's next.
Yeah, that is the next question. For players who might think, okay, if the money isn't there, if this tour isn't what we were promised, I want to go back to the USPGA. What would a pathway back look like for Australians like Cam Smith, Mark Leishman, Elvis Smiley?
So in one sense, we've seen an example of a player come back. We saw Brooks Koepka come back to the PGA Tour this year when he got out of his LIV contract. And he was able to do it by, you know, agreeing to a pretty punitive structure where he had to make an extremely large charitable donation. He had to forfeit equity and bonuses. But that's also not going to be treated as a precedent. And I think every player is going to be treated differently. You know, there's some players that sued the PGA Tour that created a lot of bad blood and cost the tour a lot of money. There are some players who really trash talked the PGA Tour, and there's some who didn't. So I think it's really going to be on a case by case basis.
I've made my bed and I'm going to sleep in it. I feel like I'm in a really good place in my career, in my life, my family life, and I don't need to change it.
But it's not going to be easy. I don't think everyone's just going to wake up one day and say, "Oh, forget this big fight that happened. Let's all sing Kumbaya." It seems like there's going to be a real process for these players to make their way back, because they're taking the job of someone who's on the PGA Tour, and the players in large part are the ones who are the stakeholders here. And so there's going to be tough decisions have to be made.
So what's been the response from the PGA? What have you heard from that body who now become the focus for players who might want to go back?
Yeah, so I haven't spoken to people from the tour since we reported our story, but we had previously spoken to PGA Tour Chief Executive Brian Rolapp, and he was the one who made it clear that they're going to do what's best for their tour. But, you know, a Brooks Koepka and his path back, that's not going to be treated as a one-to-one precedent and that everyone's going to get the same deal. He was someone who actively sought to return to the tour, and he wasn't someone who trash-talked the tour or sued the tour. So it's really going to be different on a player-by-player basis.
John Rahm has routed a high-class field in Mexico City.
And especially when they're not going to be weighing one-off cases, but the idea of, you know, potentially a large group of players that could be taking a large number of jobs.
In terms of the money, a player like Cam Smith, who was rumored to be on, you know, $150 million, do you think he still gets paid? What would his situation be?
I'm not privy to every player's specific contract, but in general, you know, players got some upfront money, in some cases in quarterly installments. And I think it remains to be determined if they're going to get that money. And I think there's a reasonable chance that they might be missing out on at least some of that.
Cam Smith is entering the Coliseum, the 12th tee, the watering hole.
And the LIV event in Australia was probably the biggest success for LIV, hundreds of thousands of people attending. Would you anticipate that an event like that simply goes away, or would there be power brokers that have taken note of the success of that tournament and would want that to continue?
I think whatever happens is LIV has shown that there are untapped markets for pro golf around the world. And I think there's no better proof than LIV Golf Adelaide. And so whether that is another tour taking root there and bringing a stop there, whether it's the PGA Tour someday, whether it's LIV in some sort of alternate form or LIV continuing on, I think what they have shown is that there is a big appetite for bringing the best professional golfers around outside the normal stops, mainly in the U.S. And so I think a lot of businesses, whether that is the PGA Tour, whether that is other tours around the world, would be wise to take a look and say, you know, even if this business failed, this event did succeed.
Before I let you go, Andrew, you've broken this story in the past few hours. It's a story that sort of came up a few weeks ago, but now seems more solid. LIV were quick to challenge the stories from a few weeks ago when they had their event in Mexico City. Have you heard from someone since breaking this story?
Yeah, what I'd say is within LIV, there is probably more optimism than there is externally about them finding some sort of investment or alternate way forward.
How we go forward is what I'm really excited about. I talked about some structural changes. They're coming. You can ask just about the 50 people I met in Augusta. I rolled out the plan. We have one. It might surprise some people.
One of the difficult things about these things is that while we're all thinking about Bryson DeChambeau and John Rahm and Cam Smith, there are also a lot of jobs on the line here, and I think they're going to fight as hard as they can, because this is a business run by a large number of employees, and they want to make this work. So they're going to try as hard as they can to do that.
And do you think the players on the PGA Tour will welcome back those players who have gone to LIV and might have to come skulking back to the PGA?
I think, again, it's player by player. Some players have created more bad blood than others.
I still hate LIV. Like, I hate LIV. Like, I hope it goes away, and I would fully expect that it does.
In general, a lot of them were upset, but, like, even Brooks Koepka, when he came back, said, you know, he's going to have to do a lot of repairing relationships. And so I think players will have to show contrition. They'll have to pay some sort of punishment. And it'll be really player by player based on like how many bridges they burned in this process.
Andrew Beaton, you've been at the center of this story. We appreciate your time on a really busy day for you. Thank you.
Yep, thanks so much, guys.
As the story has developed across today, we're still awaiting official comment from Golf Australia. Now, LIV is not in their jurisdiction, even though there's an event in Adelaide. Right now, we get the sense they're most concerned about the Australian players involved rather than the league itself. From an Australian lens, the Ripper GC team, consisting of Cameron Smith, Mark Leishman, Lucas Herbert and Elvis Smiley, have told us they remain committed to 2026 and beyond and will line up in the event in Washington, DC next weekend. LIV sources have backed up CEO Scott O'Neill's statement from a few weeks ago that key figures have been working in the background for months to secure other funding to ensure LIV continues into the future without Saudi Arabia's PIF money. But the fact that they're focused on raising money to address huge imminent gaps tells you that it's a very different league than the one that has spent US billions to this point. As for the Adelaide event, South Australia Premier Peter Malinauskas today spoke about what he knows.
Last week I spoke to the CEO of LIV Golf, Scott O'Neill. He confirmed that they're planning to go ahead in Adelaide as scheduled in 2027. But clearly there have been reports of challenges and it's hard to know, you know, what exactly is going on. We continue to monitor the situation closely. Right now I don't know anything more than what you're reading in the media.
You'd need a very good caddy to know how to read this screen, and it feels like it's changing by the minute. So, as always, we'll keep you across the need-to-know news. Headlines. After 12 months of pitching, meetings, debate and deadlines, Cricket Australia have put the privatisation of the Big Bash on hold. Queensland and South Australia have joined New South Wales in rejecting the proposal for the sale, with CA confirming today that they were yet to reach consensus. Part of their statement read, "Given CA does not currently have full alignment on the proposed next step with our members, some alternative options are being considered that require additional analysis and consideration with the states, and that work is underway." Whew, who knows what the second new ball will bring. In the AFL, Ross Lyon today fronted the media for the first time since the story came out around his apology to several of St Kilda's First Nations players after comments during a training. Lyon said he was grateful for the support and understanding from the players and clarified whether or not he offered up his job.
All relationships are built on trust. So the context of that was, if you don't think I can rebuild the trust, I would consider my position. It wasn't a take it. So that's the nuance. So I think that's really important.
Sticking with the AFL, and Fremantle player Nathan O'Driscoll has opened up via his Instagram on his own serious mental health battles. He said he wanted to share his struggles with anxiety and depression because, quote, speaking up matters and it's okay to not be okay. In Champions League football, Arsenal and Atletico Madrid have played out a 1-1 draw in Spain, with both teams slotting penalties either side of half time.
And Jokeres wraps it into the back of the Atletico Madrid net, celebrates in front of the Atletico Madrid supporters, and Arsenal lead 1-0 in the Metropolitano.
The second leg will be next week in London, with the winner proceeding to the final at the end of the month. Finally, Maroons women's coach Nathan Cross has sprung a last-minute change ahead of Origin Game 1 tonight, with Ivania Lolesio coming from outside the original 17 named to debut in the centres. Catch all the best coverage of the women's State of Origin in Newcastle tonight on ABC Sport, with New South Wales looking to defend their 2025 victory over Queensland. I'm Declan Byrne. This is ABC Sport Daily. Thanks to LIV Golf, the Golf Channel and Stan Sport for the extra audio used in this episode.